crime.
One thing stood out in my mind. I remember a black woman, and she came to the station and she wanted to complain that something had happened to her son and a white officer had done it. And so the corporal said, well, ma'am, after hearing it, he said that we don't condone that type of behavior. We'd like for you to fill out this complaint. She wanted to know in detail, how do you do it, so she could do it correctly. She came back to the window several times to make sure she was doing it right. She was very hurt, but she calmed herself down to complete it. And he looked at it, took some time to look at it. And then she felt that he was really concerned. And when she walked out the door, he balled it up and threw it in the trash. And at that point, I was stunned. And I began to realize that when it comes to policing, there's really nobody is over you at the time that you're dealing with the public. When you are one of the few cops that comes out and reveals things, those who are corrupt don't like it. Let me give you a good example. Right now, after 22 years of law enforcement, I don't get a retirement from law enforcement. That's by design. Several of the departments that I work for, when I contacted the state, they said, we have no record of you working. And it's a violation for them, a misdemeanor for them, not to report those things. So there is a price that you pay. In addition to the intimidation, the false complaints, the failure to promote, and all of these things.
Anthony Shahid, who is an activist and community leader in the St. Louis area, has been fighting for justice for so long. He's been an advisor and confidant of Mike Brown Sr. and many others who've lost their family members to police violence.
It's called Sankofa, and it's one of the biggest symbols in Africa. Africa got all kinds of symbols. Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. But of all the ones I know of, it's this bird here, because he flies this way. But he's got his whole head turned all the way back. And inside he has an egg. And this is symbolic to the golden egg, because until you understand what happened in your past, you can't go forward. So it's like a slingshot. In order to go ahead, you got to pull it back. Until you know your history, what your people did, how strong you are, how powerful you are.
Look at post Mike Brown, and we see at least one activist being killed, at least one activist being killed each year up until 2018. And of course, we're just entering 2020.
To put fear, to call, thinking, but this new generation, I'm sorry, I have to keep switching. This new generation, you can't put fear into them like that. You can't, some of these older ones.
Why can't you put fear in the young ones?
Because they brought up different. They don't fear nothing, they don't have nothing, they can't lose nothing. And I think the most dangerous person in the world, the person don't have nothing to lose.
Danye Jones, DeAndre Joshua, Marshawn McCarroll, Edward Crawford Jr., Darren Seals, Bassem Masri. Before I was investigating if justice would be served in the case of Mike Brown, but now there are so many other cases, so many other names.
We have Edward Crawford, DeAndre Joshua, we have Darren Seals, and of course, we have...
Danye Jones.
Yes, Danye Jones, Melissa McKinney's son.
Who I stand with, who I respect, who I love, who was out there. And I don't just say front line, she was on every part of the line. Wherever she was needed, that's why she was there. Because she didn't want what just happened to her son to happen to others. And she was out there.
But what about others? I had wanted to talk to the family members of the six activists, but only one was willing to speak to me. The fear was paralyzing in this town.
We have been getting threats. There were Occupy cars sitting outside of my home.
They had black cars, and they were in Union Electric trucks. They walked up, and like five of them stood in front of my home. Diane and I just kept looking like this, and Diane kind of like, whoa, what they're doing? I said, don't worry about it, it's nothing in here, you know. So I said, let them sit out there. And so we watched him and we laughed. We was laughing at them. They stood, they got in their cars and they parked right there in their black trucks. So they're trying to do it again. They do this to intimidate us, mm-hmm. you know.
They sent me, there was after maybe a march or a rally, they said that it's really easy to get to me, that they were right behind me. It made me more alert, but it didn't scare me enough to, you know, to stop. You know, it has to be scary. You could lose your life or your loved one's life, especially your children. He was born with the umbilical cord wrapped around his neck, and that he would not be able to speak properly or walk on his own. He was in a wheelchair and he had to wear braces, and he busted out of his braces like Forrest Gump.
Destiny is a fate that must be played out. Sometimes it can be glorious, sometimes filled with pain, and at times joyous, and other times some of the cruelest of experiences that life can bring us. Danye became a warrior from the time he was born. He overcame all of his physical ailments and won those struggles. But as he got older, he would realize that his main struggle would be something else. Being a black man in America, especially in St. Louis, Ferguson, would always keep him in fighter mode, to fight for his rights and others, and to even fight for his own survival.
October 16th at night, went into, probably was sleep for maybe 4 hours or so. The light was on in the basement and Danye didn't answer. I didn't see him. I walked out, opened the door, and we have this one tree in our yard. I saw some legs. So I started shaking my head to make sure that I was awake, you know. And I kept shaking it. And then I walked closer to make sure that I was seeing. So I walked over and looked again and, I need one more. I kept saying, Danye. It's like, Danye. And then they called now. And they told them to take Danye down.
So they told them to take him down before the police got here?
Yes. I couldn't hear anything. It's like my hearing left. And I just kept saying to my husband, is that my baby? Is that my baby? And I was looking up at him. I was like, is that my baby? And the look in his face, it was like, you know. And he was saying, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I just kept thinking, what happened? I kept thinking, like, what's going on? And I was hoping somebody would just pinch me and wake me up. You know, because I still felt sleep and I still felt that pain in my hand. So I'm like, maybe if I call 911. And then they called 911. And they told them to take Danye down to disturb the crime scene.
A wife who loses a husband is called a widow. A husband who loses a wife is called a widower. A child who loses his parents is called an orphan. However, there is no word for a parent who loses a child. That's how awful the loss is. These mothers feel now that they have no choice but to fight back.
They said it's suicide. I said, wow. And then they also said that the medical examiner told me that she would, they would have to destroy the sheet because of health risk. Now, this is the same sheet that was around Danye's neck, but they gave me back all of his articles of clothing, including drawers with mucus and everything on it and blood. But the sheet was considered a health risk. So we had an attorney call to make a threat, and they threatened him that that's one thing you don't want to do is get rid of that evidence because it's going to be a private investigation, and we need that evidence. So they put a stop to it, and I'm just praying that this is the same sheet. My son was not in the Navy, the Army, the Marines, or anything, Boy Scouts. He wasn't in the militia, any of that. He did not know how to tie Navy knots. Since the pictures were taken, you can see on there that those were Navy knots. You can see that my son had a knot on his face. You can see that my son's pants were rolled down, not pulled down, but rolled down outward to his ankles. And you can see that his fists were bald. I think that all of these activist killings, assassinations are related because they could not stop us from speaking the truth. So if they can't get to us, then they go for our children.
If we're going to be in a warfare, we need to study the tactics of the Art of War by Sun Tzu. That's all of those things are being used on us. You know, you can't fight with cotton balls. You can't fight people who have clubs with cotton balls because there's no sensitivity. So if this is a war and everything relative to a war and that's consistent with a war is happening to us, we're losing troops, you know, we're paying the price. There's death and so forth. There's pain, there's suffering. Then we're going to have to deal with it with the strategies that people in war use.
I see war in the future. That's just my truth against dirty cops. People tired of losing their loved ones. Of course, they want to shut the suspect's mouth. That's just what they want to do, you know. So it don't. I'm not going to say the dead can't talk. Me personally, I don't think a peaceful protest will bring change. I think that it need to be more action.
They've been lynching us for over 400 years. We're going to have to come together and stay conscious. They had us watching TV all the time and wanting to splurge with the money and the drugs. But we're starting to wake up now because the devil has many plans and we can't allow it to overcome us. So we fight him. We have to come together. We cannot do this separate. We have to come together.
Kill, it's a war in the streets. Living in the end times, revelations I speak. It's going down, I'm ready. 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 Murder.
There have been so many others killed by police since Mike Brown, sometimes sparking protests around the country and even some legislation changes. But so far, none of these efforts have led to a different reality. What is it going to take to bring about a change in America to this never-ending story?
And the government know it, that's why his ass on the moon. But I'm supposed to be stupid, filled up with weed and liquor, while my people get poorer and you bastards get richer. Hold your eyes open wide, cause I'm painting a picture. Every day on the news, it's getting bigger and clearer. Tornadoes ripping through cities, earthquakes and hurricanes, floods. And the media sugarcoat what they know coming up. Murder, murder, kill, kill. It's a war in the streets. Living in the end times, revelations I speak. It's going down.
I'm ready.
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 Murder, murder, kill, kill. It's a war in the streets. Living in the end times, revelations I speak. It's going down.
I'm ready.
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 The family falling apart, but tell me who really cares? In the heart of America, it's a real nightmare. Every day getting worse, every week getting fatal. Every month is disaster, every year going faster. Ozone is hurting, the West Coast on fire. The end times for certain, a new world for hire. This man-made corruption is soon to expire. Murder, lust, and greed is about to stand trial.
Murder, murder, kill, kill. It's a war on the streets. Living in the end times.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. The Limelight.
Experts say the Zionist regime's plans and ambitions in the Eastern Mediterranean will not be complete unless it confiscates Gaza's gas field, but to no avail. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, "The terrifying scale of the destruction the Zionist regime's war machine has wrought in Gaza indicates that the goal of this onslaught is not merely to destroy the resistance movement Hamas. Rather, we can infer that this aggression has been a long time coming, as the Zionist regime waited for an opportune time to unleash its full military force against the besieged Palestinian territory." Some have argued that the Zionist regime's goal is to push the population of Gaza into the Sinai, and the October 7th events provided the pretext for this operation to begin in earnest. Zionism, as an ideology, is based on the displacement of landowners through intimidation and cutting off vital infrastructure, paving the way for Israeli settlers to move in. But there is another, more important reason behind the Zionist regime's current war. The promising natural gas wealth found in Eastern Mediterranean, specifically off the coast of Gaza. The Levant gas field includes the shores of historic Palestine, Syria, Lebanon, and the opposite side, the island of Cyprus. This field is estimated to contain about 122 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. As for the Palestinian shores of Gaza, British Gas confirmed in 1999 that the reserves in Gaza Marine are estimated at 1.1 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. That same year, the Palestinian Authority granted British Gas a 25-year contract to exploit the Gaza Marine natural gas field. Until now, after 25 years, the Palestinians have never benefited from it. This is due to the obstacles that the Zionist regime placed under many pretexts, including, for example, the fear that the revenues will go to finance terrorism against the Zionist regime. Several Israeli regime governments, from Ehud Barak to Benjamin Netanyahu, have given approval to the Palestinians on several occasions to begin exploiting the Gaza Marine. However, every time, the Zionist regime retracted its approval. It is obvious the Zionist regime is keen not to give the Palestinians any sense of sovereignty over their land or territorial waters, which is further evidence of Israel's premeditated intentions to displace the Palestinians from their historical lands and confiscate their natural resources. In addition to Gaza's natural gas, it is worth pointing out that the Zionist regime is stealing Palestinian natural gas from the Minged oil and gas field in the occupied West Bank on the pretext that the field is located to the west of the Armistice Line of 1948. While the Zionist regime has never been serious about the so-called peace process or the Palestinian right to independence and self-determination, Netanyahu has taken an exceptionally hard line. The regime's longest-serving leader chose the path of economic peace. At the same time, he has focused on mega-projects tailored primarily to benefit Israelis, while potentially offering secondary benefits to the Palestinian population. In this regard, he has focused on two main areas: transforming Israel into a gateway and corridor linking East and West, and making the regime a global center for natural gas exports. On the first goal, the centerpiece is planned India-Middle East-Europe Economic Corridor, or IMEC, which will connect India with Europe via the Persian Gulf and Israel. In addition, amid the ongoing risk of attacks in the Red Sea, Egypt and the UAE have worked with the Zionist regime to establish an alternative land route with Saudi Arabia and Jordan to bypass the Yemeni threat. As for the second goal, Israel has made significant efforts to conclude gas deals with Cyprus, Greece, and Egypt. But Israel's plans and ambitions in this regard will not be complete unless it confiscates Gaza's gas reserves. Netanyahu has made clear his intentions to bypass the aspirations of the Palestinian people, having noted last year that they should be part of the peace process, but they should not have a veto over the process. The Zionist regime's desire to seize Gaza gas can partially explain Netanyahu's intransigence when it comes to ceasefire initiatives, as this project hinges on Israel maintaining security control over the territory and expelling the Palestinian population. The Zionist regime's ministers have spoken openly about these goals since the start of the war. Among the evidence that proves the validity of this analysis are two important matters. First, it is surprising that Israel has granted licenses to three companies to explore for natural gas in the marine area off the shores of Gaza and Israel. This Israeli move confirms that Israel's deliberate intention to steal the Palestinians' natural gas wealth, reasoning that Gaza, Palestine, is not a sovereign state and therefore has no right to demand sovereignty over the special economic zone according to the law of sea, although Palestine has been accepted as an observer member of the UN in 2012. The Zionist regime has not yet signed the UN Convention on the Sea and has not even demarcated its maritime borders. The Zionist regime is aware of the enormous amount of political support it enjoys from the Western Europe and the United States. These actors just participated in the latest Munich Security Conference, whose main focus was on the normalization between the Zionist regime and Arab states by expanding the Abraham Accords. The Zionist regime views the resistance movement Hamas and all Palestinian resistance groups as a bottleneck to its greater regional ambitions, most notably the seizure of Gaza's natural gas wealth. Ultimately, the goal of an independent Palestinian state, or at least one in which Palestinians can control their own natural resources, is attainable. But first, they must withstand the Zionist regime's onslaught in Rafah. This could be Israel's last chance to displace the Palestinian population of Gaza. Aperture.
Welcome back to Aperture, everyone. First part of the documentary witnessed the rise and fall of gold used as currency throughout human civilization, from first gold coins in Lydia to their dominance of over 1,000 years in the Byzantine Empire. But what role does gold play in the modern international economic arena, and how has it made a comeback after the dollar took over for about half a century?
Under the gold standard, in which money is issued based on the reserved gold, the prices of commodities are more stable because the government cannot simply issue more money. Also, trade deficits remain under control. Trade deficits under the gold standard refer to the effect of domestic gold transferring over to other countries due to an increase in revenue. If there is less gold, less money is issued. With less money, consumption and income automatically decrease. Export relatively increases, and the country sees a surplus in trade. Under the gold standard, the value of money is very stable, unless the amount of gold drastically increases. However, because of this, the gold era collapsed. The gold standard, in which issued money is tied to gold. When the economy began to grow rapidly, thanks to the Industrial Revolution, the amount of money needed to grow as well. However, because of the limited amount of gold, sufficient amount of money could not be issued. This problem became more evident during World War I. The countries that participated in the war had to issue large sums of money to fund the war. One by one, they began to discard the gold standard. The gold standard faced another crisis during the Great Depression. As countries began to exchange foreign currency for gold in fear of the never-ending depression, it led to disputes over gold.
As it has endured,
we'll revive and we'll prosper.
In 1933, President Roosevelt nullified the gold standard, and more countries began to discard it. After World War II, the world's gold gathered in the U.S., and the gold standard was gradually disappearing. In 1944, each country's representative gathered in Bretton Woods, USA. 44 countries participated, but it was actually a battle between England and the U.S. and in the end, the U.S. won. Since then, the dollar became the key currency of the world. It was a defining moment for the U.S. as it became the empire of finances. However, during the Vietnam War, the dollar faced a crisis. More money was issued to fund the war, which led to increased prices and deficits. When the value of the dollar plunged, each country began to ask for gold conversion. It was the first crisis that the dollar had faced. In 1971, U.S. President Nixon declared the prohibition of gold conversion. He no longer allowed exchanging dollars for gold. Along with the Nixon shock, the era of gold ended and the Bretton Woods Agreement collapsed. The financial system in use today is the result of the Nixon shock. The U.S. is still home to the largest economy, maintains the dollar as the international currency, and other countries put their destinies in the hands of the dollar. The U.S., which had abandoned gold, now had the power to issue as many dollars as they wanted. The Asian financial crisis in 1997 that drove Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Korea to the edge of a cliff was the result of the U.S. recklessly issuing dollars. The reckless printing of the dollar can threaten any given country. This is all possible because of the absence of gold as a standard. The gold and the dollar, which were linked together at one point, now were on diverging paths. The ups and downs of civilizations and currency have a special relationship. If a strong civilization appears, its currency becomes strong as well, and if the currency value falls, the civilization also wanes. Whether they were coins or paper money, overissuance of money always led to the collapse of an empire.
A powerful government means powerful economy. The reason why the government is powerful because the economic system is so strong and the people work hard, make money, pay the tax. So the government can get more and more tax, which has a lot of wealth and a lot of spending power, which keep the government strong, keep the country or empire strong. But why such system can have a stronger economy compared to others? I think money is a big issue. It's a very important.
Ancient Rome is the representative case where the empire's history followed the ups and downs of currency. Once ancient Rome expanded to the Mediterranean Sea, the circulation range of the currency did as well. The expansion of the local currency led to stronger national power through the acquisition of local resources. Periods of stable prices and a booming economy coincide with the peak of the Roman Empire. In 54 AD, the peaceful reign of the Roman Empire ended under Emperor Nero. Nero reduced the amount of gold used in coins and made thinner, smaller ones. His successors also degraded the coins, and the value of money plunged. The currency system completely collapsed, and the government had to collect taxes through goods and services instead of money. The strong empire had reverted back to the time of the exchange of goods. In 476 AD, the thousand-year-old civilization of the Roman Empire collapsed. Even after the collapse of the Western Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire continued to flourish and survived for another 1,000 years. The secret to the survival of the Byzantine Empire, despite frequent battles, was the bezant, the Byzantine coin. However, after the Crusades, even the value of the bezant plunged. In 1453, the Byzantine Empire fell when the last bezant was used up. The Byzantine Empire disappeared along with the bezant, and the Ottoman Turks became the rulers of a new empire. The special relationship between the fall of a currency and an empire can also be seen in China. During the Bukong dynasty, people in Sichuan made coins out of iron. At the time, about 20,000 iron coins were needed to buy a roll of fabric. A carriage was needed just to buy a roll of fabric. So in order to solve this problem, the world's first paper money, Gilja, was invented using iron coins as collateral. However, 100 years later, due to the government's over-issuance of money, the world's first paper money disappeared. Once the currency system collapsed, the Song dynasty lost its military and political power and collapsed under the Mongolian invasion. The Yuan dynasty that watched the Song dynasty's fall issued gyocho, based on silver, and created a stable currency system. However, the problem was the endless wars. Every time it faced financial difficulties, the government overissued gyocho, and the currency system collapsed. Once the currency system collapsed, the Yuan dynasty fell like all other empires. The national crisis shook the trust in currency, and the failure of the currency system led to the collapse of an empire. A strong currency and a strong empire were the two pillars that drove history. New York, USA. The Federal Reserve Bank on Wall Street houses the world's largest gold safe. In the 122 gold safes that are located 24 meters underground is gold that other governments, central banks, and international organizations entrusted. After the gold standard disappeared, gold that lost its place to the dollar disappeared into the dark. Then, what backs the value of currency? It's the world's key currency that is the foundation of international trade and transactions. The source of that power is in national strength. The British pound dominated the world's economy for 100 years, and then the US dollar took over. It was the result of the currency war among nations.
Oftentimes, over time in history, you find that as countries change in their economic power, the UK and then the US, reserve currencies change. But I think we're moving to a world where there's a lot more engines of growth, and it makes sense to have multiple reserve currencies. So this is a function not just of the United States, but really of the changing world economy. But it does mean, though, for the United States, if other currencies are used as reserve holdings, then there will be a relative fall in the demand for the dollar as a foreign exchange reserve holding, and that's worrisome if the U.S. has a lot of debt to sell.
The Byzantine bezant, 700 years. The British pound, 100 years. These are the number of years these key currencies dominated the world. Then how much longer will the dollar rule the world? People's fantasy about the dollar shattered in September 2008. The financial crisis that originated from the U.S. left the world in fear, and people immediately rushed to obtain gold. The moment greed turned to fear, the emperor, sleeping in the dark, awoke from its slumber. After 40 years of sleep, gold has returned. The price of gold rose 22 times in 2010, which is a record within a given year. Now the world is rushing out to buy gold. The central banks of each country bought 216 tons of gold just in the first half of 2011. The price of gold is skyrocketing, and the US and the dollar is plunging endlessly.
Even before the financial crisis, there were trends underway which made it likely that the US would not play as dominant a role in international finance as it has in recent decades. You had the creation of the euro, a currency for a very large economic area, and the euro was beginning to play a larger role. In addition, you've got the emergence of China, already the second largest economy in the world and growing very rapidly, that makes it natural that over time, as Chinese financial markets develop, as they open up their capital markets, then I think we will see the renminbi play a larger role as well.
Just as it defeated England at the Bretton Woods Conference, defeated France via the Nixon shock, put Germany and Japan under control, will the US be able to win the currency war once again?
Well, the United States is now in relative decline to the rest of the world. As you probably know, the 19th century was the century of the UK. It went into decline during the 20th century, and it's no longer anywhere near the major economy in the world. The 20th century was the century of the US. We're now in relative decline, too. The largest creditor nations in the world now are China, Korea, Japan, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Singapore. The assets and the money, the wealth, is in Asia now. The United States is the largest debtor nation, not just the largest debtor nation in the world, we're the largest debtor nation in the history.
Once the U.S., the financial empire built on debt and the power of the dollar, began to shake, the world began to debate about the new key currency. The one that's receiving the most attention is gold, that it has returned after 40 years. Is gold the omnipotent currency that will bring stability back? Or is it just a mirage?
Well, the fundamental dilemma for somebody that's thinking of holding gold is that gold does not produce an income. Now, I mentioned art. Art does not produce an income, but it gives you a mental income. It gives you a psychological income. Common stocks, equities, or bonds, they give you a financial income. Gold doesn't do that. What gold does do is it gives you some security.
So as it stands today, we think gold is undervalued by a pretty good margin. We don't know if 10,000 is the target, but we do think that the difference between $1,500 and $10,000 an ounce represents the degree of inflation, true inflation, that we've seen in the currency. Now, if we were to use the same formula that we used from 1945 to 1971, the price of gold would be $10,000 an ounce.
Gold versus the dollar. The currency war has already begun. Gold is stable, but its production is limited. On the other hand, the dollar, with no restriction in production, has lost its stability. The gold standard was discarded 40 years ago after the Nixon shock. Will the era of gold return?
So I don't see gold coming back anytime soon. But if we had a serious crisis and there was nothing else, people might grab for the gold standard. But remember, the gold standard has many flaws as well.
I do not see gold playing an official part of a formal payment system. It's not convenient to exchange. It's not as stable in value as a basket of national currencies.
I think there's a pretty good chance that the gold standard will come back, although timing is a very difficult thing to try to handicap. It may come as a result of policy, but in practical terms, it's probably going to be the marketplace that drives the gold standard back into widespread acceptance.
The new key currency that will follow the British pound of the 19th century and the dollar of the 20th century. The birth of a new key currency begins from people's trust. In the midst of the world economic crisis, we are at a point where we must decide the future key currency.
Gold actually is not a government decision. We use this as a money. I think gold in the history, it's been chosen by the market. People trust gold. So when the people trust that gold or silver, so the government just use that as the money. If that's the case, I think probably in the future or in the current world, probably we should let the market to choose which one is better solution for our current problem.
No one knows which currency to trust and which currency to choose as the key currency. But even at this moment, gold reflects humans' desire most accurately. A soft, yellow, sparkling piece of metal. It is gold that the universe created. But humans gave it power, honor, and immortality. And the destiny of gold changed. Gold has written history for thousands of years. And humanity abandoned gold 40 years ago. But gold has returned. Will the return of gold be a blessing or a disaster? We stand before gold once again.
Well, with increasing political instability inside the U.S. and with the aftermath of the economic meltdown, perhaps the days of the dollar are in decline. And as history has proven to previous empires, when the dollar is out, U.S. dominance around the world will also fade away. Well, that's a wrap for this week. But join me again here next time on Aperture. Goodbye for now.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei's opinion on Imam Mehdi. Imam Mehdi's birth anniversary is a manifestation of optimism about the future. April 30th, 2018. The 15th of Sha'ban is the embodiment of our hopeful outlook towards the future. All the hope that we invest in something may or may not have the outcome that we hoped for. However, the hope towards the final salvation by the absolute Wali, representative of God, of the Almighty God, the Imam of the time, may God hasten his reappearance, and may our souls be sacrificed for his sake, is an inviolable hope. It is not only Shias that have made this claim. It is not only Muslims that have made this claim. All religions of the world are waiting for such a day to come. Our privilege is that we know him. We feel his existence. We believe in his existence. We speak to him. We address him. We make requests to him, and he grants us our requests. This is the difference between us and others. Others, non-Shia Muslims and non-Muslim believers believe in something that is vague. However, this is not the case with us Shias. It is clear what we want and whom we speak to. The 15th of Sha'ban is a day of hope.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Seeking intercession from Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is a means for expressing obedience to God. May 10th, 2017. As for the Imam of the time, may God hasten his reappearance and God's greetings be upon him. The first point is that the great personality is the inviter to God. Looking at that great Imam alayhi salam is a way of expressing one's love for and obedience to Allah the Exalted. Greetings be upon you who invite to God and who are conversant with His signs. All matters, all prophets, all saints, all sanctities, and all pure souls who cast light on our lives, on our world, and on the entire universe are the signs and reflections of God. This is a point that should receive attention. We pay attention to the Imam of the time, alayhi salam, and we appeal and show humbleness before that great Imam, alayhi salam, so that this humbleness reaches the essence of the Only One, and so that we show our obedience to Allah the Exalted.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh,
of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Iran Zamzam's company is poised to replace two major international soft drink brands in the region, driven by a growing boycott sentiment against Israeli army-associated products following the Gaza conflict. Having already entered markets in Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, and the UAE, the company aims to export 4 million cans of its popular soda to Kuwait, making a significant milestone in its expansion efforts.
My concept revolved around organizing a festival exclusively showcasing Iranian products. However, following the conflict in Gaza and the overwhelming positive feedback we received, we expanded our vision to encompass Turkish and Kuwaiti products as well. The event is spanned 2 months, during which we received numerous requests for an extension. Our primary objective at the society remains to spotlight Iranian, Kuwaiti, and Turkish goods, particularly as consumers are actively seeking alternatives to products associated with Israel.
Zamzam's growth in the Persian Gulf soft drink market is reinforced by its official replacement status for soda drinks in Kuwait alongside local brands like LC and Kenzo. The Iranian Turkish festival organized by the biggest societies in Kuwait, Al Jabriya, has been instrumental in promoting Zamzam and other locally made alternatives as primary substitutes for boycotted products, significantly boosting Zamzam's popularity and market presence in Kuwait.
We're also operating as a retail seller, catering to the demand for products from Iran, Turkey, and Kuwait, which many customers have been requesting. While we understand that implementing boycotts can be challenging to achieve rapidly, it's not unattainable. Therefore, in response to the tragic events in Gaza, we've completely redirected our focus towards promoting locally made products through a campaign titled Support Us to ICE. The response has been phenomenal, with our sales soaring. Moreover, numerous other societies in Kuwait have chosen to follow suit and advocate exclusively for Iranian, Turkish, and locally produced goods.
The shift in consumer preference toward locally produced alternatives like Zamzam is emblematic of the broader economic repercussions of the conflict in Gaza. Major multinational corporations, including Starbucks, McDonald's, and Pepsi Cola, have experienced a significant decline in sales as consumers increasingly opt for products that align with their values and principles. As Zamzam continues to expand its footprint